Yes.
Continue with Bakke. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. It's kind of fuzzy somehow, and there's people's goodwill are going to go on. What concerns me so much about the case is that it provides political cop-out to people who lack goodwill to do anything about affirmative action. I'm wondering if you've got any suggestions. I mean, or instead do it, don't talk about it. But what about those people who really have never wanted to do it?
Yeah, the only thing is to sue them. And that's, it is amazing how I still think so. I mean, a lot of people are discouraged, but I really still think so. And with the lawyers' fees that are available under Title VII and the increasing generosity of courts, I mean, they are improving across the country on the award of title fees, and that's something else that I've been able to do in a little way in the civil division is cut down the government's opposition to the award of attorney's fees where, you know, where they are justified. But it has been surprising to me how much people run scared of being sued. And the other thing I think is, you know, people really don't want to be called discriminators, you know, and they do, even the worst people get hurt by it, you know. It's really true, and it's a lot of trouble to be sued. It's a lot of trouble to go into court and testify and try to explain your actions. Let me get some of the people who haven't. Yeah, and I'll come back. Really, because the government's very hard pressed. It's, you know, there are a lot of rich fat agencies, glamour agencies. But I can tell you one thing: the civil division is not one of them, and we really need a lot more resources, and that's one of my big interests. Paralegal training, getting more paralegals, having in-house training for them, and establishing career ladders for the lawyers. See, we are competitive with private firms at the entry level jobs. But that ends in about 3 or 4 years, and so I'm really concerned with getting our best people that we've put a lot of training into to stay on, to get to a point where they see a future for themselves. Yes.
First of all, I want to say thank God for your appointment, which you were doing it long overdue. And I
say, well, okay, in cases where they've been found, which require too few, how many supervisors have been suspended or terminated? The answer is the same every year, so it really is a game now. It is none. And the same thing with reprisal. I mean, I have not heard of any instance where someone even received a reprimand for reprising against someone who has filed a complaint and exercised their right. A woman sitting right in front of me is a classic example who won a sex discrimination complaint, but after 7 separate reprisal charges had to be filed, and she went through more emotional, financial, psychological hell in 2.5 years and got no relief anywhere because the U.S. attorney was the worst.
Yeah, no, I really agree with you that the situation, although I guess I am a little bit more sanguine about progress than you may be, working more closely, especially working for the Navy.
I understand that you have
Yes. I'm not sure about that case. I did put out a memo to a general policy statement to the Civil Division and all the U.S. attorneys saying that we would not accept in egregious cases of bad faith, whatever that means, seek fees against EEO complainants. So that was just a little thing, though. It was read. It's very funny because 3 U.S. attorneys apparently came up to Judge Bell at the ABA meeting in Chicago and complained that I had put out a memo saying that the government would never again raise statute of limitations, standing, or any of the arguments that the government you could never put out a memo like that. But it's the same thing. You take a tiny little step, which is to say we won't seek, we won't do this thing which chills people from bringing EEO complaints by seeking costs and attorney's fees against them when they lose. And everybody thinks that you have said that the government's going to lie down and die in all future cases. Just amazes me. I mean, it's just been one of the most... But go ahead. That's right. That's the reason I was concerned. And there was one, and I don't know if we have the same case in mind, but there was one very egregious case which brought this to my attention, in which involved a GS-5 employee, and she lost her case and was assessed, you know, a couple of thousand dollars. That's crazy. But yeah, go ahead. No, it wouldn't. It's just that it would be the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court spoke in constitutional terms and devised the concept of reverse discrimination or endorsed the fact that there was such a concept, it would spill over into Title VII. It wouldn't apply in terms. I just reiterate, I'll just be very surprised, and I'm sure that some people will say it, but they'll just be... all kinds of language. Sure. Yes.
It's my understanding that there's been some attempt by government orders to
I can't believe it. I
General Electric versus Fielder, where they set the regulation of paying money and not charging the legislation.
Maybe, but that's certainly not a general approach that's being taken. I can assure you of that. Yeah. No, I don't think, yeah. Yeah, well, the two things. One, so far it certainly has been ad hoc. One of the things that I'm trying to do is to reorganize the Civil Division rather dramatically in order to get more control over what comes to my desk. Right now I'm really at anybody's mercy. I mean, they have to know by instinct whether I would be interested in a case or somebody from the outside tells me about a case. So I am, but this reorganization, which is going to take some time, and now it is ad hoc, although I have found that, and have been kind of encouraged, that with the responsiveness of the lawyers and of the bureaucracy, surprisingly enough, to this ad hoc approach. I mean, I really find, at least as far as the lawyers go, that they want to find out what it is that I want. And when there are failures of communication, it's my fault that I haven't been clear enough. And also that these meetings have a real ripple effect. Now, sometimes the ripple It carries a message far beyond what I intended, and yet it is, you know, when people sit down with me and I say, you know, I really have questions about doing this, and I don't think we ought to take this approach, the word does get out, to a surprising extent. Yeah. Thank you. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah.
I've been involved in affirmative action in higher education. I've likewise seen various areas very little change. But one thing that is concerning me very greatly, and I don't quite know how to approach it, is that in a number of the key court cases of late concerning higher education, the females have filed suits of law, so our test cases.
Those are the worst. That's where we've lost the most. Not we, what used to be we, have lost the most badly is in higher education. Yeah.
What's interesting is the deference that the court seems to give to collegial preference within higher ed. And if you take some of the Greek principles, they basically have subliminally ignored those principles when applying them to education. How can we get over that deference to their alumni?
You're not going to like this answer, but I was at a strategy meeting the other day, and I almost became convinced that we ought to work on some easier cases to establish the principles. I mean, the higher education cases are just too hard because you get not only are there not, no clear job descriptions, and there's just this tremendous, intuitive, will this person be a great scholar? I mean, that's the standard for Stanford Law School. Does this person have great scholarly potential? Now, how do you judge something like that? And not only are there no standards, but then the judges are just particularly resistant to interfering with university administration because there's something that they believe is inherently moral about universities, or that they're a more moral institution in our society than for instance, a big corporation. Now, I'm very discouraged about the higher ed cases, and I think we ought to lay off of them for a while. Yeah. Well, not the Title IX. I was really thinking about Title VII cases, yeah. Well, cases against big corporations, for instance, the Fortune 500, that are really sitting ducks. If a client comes to you and she has a good case and she wants a lawyer, you've got to take the case. It's just that in terms of using the resources of public interest firms and trying to develop the law, I just think we're 5 years away from getting anywhere on these higher education cases. Yes. The hiring, I think hiring are better cases than promotion. That you have a better shot in the hiring cases. But again, I mean, this was something I used to be involved in, and I'm not so much an expert in it these days. But I'm taking up. Okay, two more questions. Yes. That's great. Y'all are making me feel good. Yeah, we just settled that big case in San Francisco, which is against the NARF out there, which is, yeah.
Yeah, and that was fantastic. But I think virtually, and I talked to Rod Boggs about this, virtually there's no federal agency to date on a statistical basis that is safe from a class action.
Nothing.
That is.
Yes. No. That's what I would really like to settle these cases, and we're really open. We're very open to that. So thank you all.